let me introduce you to your next favorite true crime podcast, Crime Salad.
Ashley and Ricky, a husband and wife team, go beyond telling crime stories. They dive into the darkest corners of human nature with the ultimate goal of preventing future tragedies. Together, they shine a relentless spotlight on critical issues like relationship violence and domestic abuse, inviting you to explore the complexities of these societal challenges.
Now, let us set the scene for a recent Crime Salad episode, which is titled The Search for Haley Cummings.
The disappearance of a 5-year-old girl leaves the Florida community in disbelief. In the early morning hours of the night, an open back door remained eerily left open where Haley was staying. A wave of dread swept through the community and the family as the unimaginable happened. Was this the work of a kidnapper, or did the little girl wander off? The search for Haley brought a community together in the darkest of times.
Since 2019, Ashley and Ricky, the Crime Salad duo, have continued to deliver stories that are not only fascinating and well-researched, but also have a strong voice for change and justice. So grab your headphones and prepare to be pulled into a world where mystery meets humanity. Make sure to tune in to Crime Salad wherever you find your podcasts and join a growing community of listeners who tune in every week. And now back to your regularly scheduled haunting. Welcome back to Let's Get Haunted with your host,
Matt Strawn,
and Allie. Hey, guys.
Hello, everybody. How is it going? We know it's not great. That's why you're here.
It is episode 44, and it's Natalia's turn to tell me a spooky story today. But before that, do you want to give an update on your house? Because I'm looking behind you and it still appears that you've been kidnapped and placed in a shipping container.
Okay, so last episode I showed Alyssa that we had all of the carpet like just moved out of this room that I'm recording in. And it's been 10 days and it's still like that. And here's the reason why. Our landlord is like, I don't know how to describe him. He's like one of those. He's also the plumber. He's also the electrician. Like, he's just like a cheap guy, you know, because like nothing is done correctly. Like, I just want to show you outside right now. If you look outside the door, for the past 10 days, there's just been this pile of carpet, just strips and whatever outside in the backyard. One time our sink upstairs was leaking and we keep the scale underneath it, and so the scale was like getting all broken, and so he came over to the house. I was like, hey, the sink up here is leaking and then it drips onto the scale and now the scale is getting all wet. And he goes, okay. He takes the scale, he picks it up, and he moves it to the other side of the sink.
So he never fixed the sink. He just moved stuff out from under it.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a typical landlord.
I mean, yeah, I get along with him because I'm like, yeah, you're right. Why do more when you can do less? Work smarter, not harder.
Maybe he just knows you guys aren't going to complain, so he's just not doing anything.
Yeah, we've been like too chill with him. We've just like accepted him.
Time to up the crazy.
I could do that. I guess we could just like set all that carpet and shit on fire and then be like, we're having a bonfire with chemicals in your yard.
This episode is brought to you by Honeybolt. Honeybolt is committed to creating the highest quality CBD products. All of their hemp is organic and sourced from the United States. Unlike THC, which is the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana, CBD doesn't get you high. It's all of the calm without any of the psychoactive effects. Head to honeybolt.com to get CBD gummies, tinctures, soft gels, muscle rub, and even treats for your pets. Be sure to enter code HAUNTED at checkout for 30% off your order. That's honeybolt, HoneyBolt.com, and enter code HAUNTED at checkout now. Thanks for supporting the show.
All right, Alyssa. Now, today's episode is a very, very special episode because I put it together on my drive. So you know it's going to be very, very sloppily done. And I have to say, too, that...
Wait, you put it together on your drive, so you had no Wi-Fi, so you're doing this on your phone?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's the kind of story I'm in for today.
Let's start with a little 1840s pop culture. Is that exciting to you? You're supposed to get excited.
Okay. I'm excited.
Okay, let's try it again.
Okay.
All right, Alyssa. Let's start with a little 1840s pop culture.
1840s?
The year is 1840.
Oh.
Can you tell me what was going on in 1840?
In which country?
Anywhere.
Oh, well,
there were no countries in 1840. It was just a big piece of grass floating in the ocean.
History by Natalia. It's like, okay, here's a new change.org petition. Last episode, we said you need to rewrite the plots for every single movie on IMDb. This time, you need to rewrite the history books. No countries existed prior to 1840. Okay, this is all I know. In England, they were all being superstitious, and it was like Victorian era, and people were like peeing and pooping in chamber pots and throwing them in the street.
Okay, here is what I got about 1840 from a quote by Charles E. Rosenberg. The book is called The Cholera Years, the United States in 1832, 1849, and 1866. He says about 1840s, "The circumstances of everyday life were too demanding, and in America's great cities, appalling."
I know this is going to be such a sloppily done episode because when you start breaking out the voices, it means you have no material.
Okay. No, you're actually super wrong because did you realize that if you go to census.gov, they actually have pop culture from every decade?
Oh, whoa. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I know. It's really fucking weird because... this article with all this information I'm about to read you is from census.gov, okay? So in 1840, the icons as named by census.gov for 1840, literally the icons, it said, was Samuel Morse Telegraph, Frederick Douglass, and the sewing machine. Also, Captain Charles Wilkes circumnavigates Antarctica, claiming it for the United States on January 19th, 1840. William Henry Harrison wins the 1840 presidential election, defeating the incumbent Martin Van Buren. The August 9th, 1842 Webster-Ashburton Treaty formally designates the border separating the United States and Canada. On May 24th, 1844, Samuel B. Morse sends the message, quote, "What hath God wrought?" end quote, over the first telegraph line from Washington, D.C. to Baltimore, Maryland. Ireland's potato famine results in an influx of Irish immigrants to the United States beginning in 1845. Alexander Cartwright and his New York Knickerbockers codified the rules of baseball in 1845. Frederick Douglass publishes Narrative of Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave, in 1845. Elias Howe patents the sewing machine on September 10th, 1846. During the February 22nd to 23rd, 1847 Battle of Buena Vista, General Taylor's U.S. Army of 4,800 men defeats Mexico's 15,000-man force, led by General Santa Anna. The American Medical Association is founded in Philadelphia on May 7th, 1847. On January 24th, 1848, James Marshall discovers gold near Sutter's Fort in California, and the discovery of gold is beginning of the California Gold Rush of 1849.
So wait, so are we talking about the gold rush today?
Yes, we are.
Oh, Natalia, this sort is the perfect topic for you, because if you guys don't know, because maybe this is your first episode, Natalia really likes treasure, gold,
yes,
and any form of like finding loot. Yeah, loot.
It's very exciting to me. It's like hitting the lottery. It could be, just think about it. Imagine this.
you're walking in your backyard one day and you stub your toe and you're like, fuck, that really hurt. And then you look at the ground and there's this like little tiny white stone and you pick it up, but then no, it's attached to something deeper and you end up excavating it and it takes you 6.5 hours and it's actually a full Tyrannosaurus Rex head. Oh my and then God. You have $8 billion and you're now a philanthropist, paleontologist man.
What?
Or woman. Think about that. Like, everything just changes in an instant. I love that.
So that whole article was census.gov, and that was like stressful to me too, because I was thinking, like, right now in the United States they're doing a census, which is where like you're supposed to say where you live and like how much money you make and what your race is, so that like the deep state, I guess, can like understand who they need to eliminate.
Natalia, are you now a QAnon believer?
No, but it was weird that the census.gov, like, that there, like, you would think you look up 1840 on the census.gov and it's like a bunch of tables of like letters and I don't know, like numbers, and just it's not like, you know, pop culture from 1840 naming the icons. Because then, like, what is the census for 2020 gonna be like? It, like, is it not like, oh, there's a few billion people here and we need another hospital? It's like Kim Kardashian had 6 children and we invented iced coffee.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. So also in the 1840s, the most haunted home in America was in its infancy. Ooh. Do you know what I'm going to talk about today?
The Winchester House?
No.
Hold on. Let me think.
Why would I talk about that? You already talked about that.
No, you talked about that. I didn't talk about that. Did I talk about that?
Yeah, it's the one where she like keeps building stairs and stuff.
Yeah, you talked about that, not me.
Oh, that's very scary.
That's haunted.
Wow, what a spooky episode. No, I am going to talk to you about a home located at 2476 San Diego Avenue. It's a simple brick home. And it may not look like anything special to you, but it's been twice called the most haunted house in America. Once by The Time magazine, and the other by the Travel Channel series, America's Most Haunted.
Are you talking about that house? Are you talking about that house that listener story was about? That girl wrote in about that house in San Diego?
Yes. Do you remember what that house was called?
Whaley House.
Yes, it is called the Whaley House. Now,
wait, is that really just what you're talking about?
Yes.
Ooh, exciting. Okay.
Now, before we get into that, the first thing I want to speak about is just the name of the story. Because a name of a haunting is a crucial part of a haunting, Alyssa.
Okay.
And at first, when I read the Whaley House, I thought that this was about a house that turned into a whale, which is honestly terrifying. Yet. Think about going to your home after work on a Friday afternoon. You're exhausted after your 69 shift work week. You unlock your front door and you take a deep breath. But what's that smell? Is that seafood? No. You reason it's probably just the San Diego ocean breeze. You sit down on your couch and pull out your phone. The lights flicker above you a bit. Something normal in the homes around here. But this time something feels eerie. Something feels fishy.
You walk to the kitchen.
You walk to the kitchen and your feet sink a little deeper into the carpet than usual. The ground feels wet and warm, almost as if it's alive. You look at the hallway. It's moving. The walls are expanding and contracting as if they're breathing. It's at that moment that you realize you're inside the Whaley House, America's most haunted whale house. A giant blowhole opens in the ceiling and you're catapulted at 150 miles an hour into the sky. And then you fall to your death on top of the very home that you thought you could trust not to be a whale. Then you haunt the house. What do you think about that?
This is just a giant shit post. This episode is going to be on par with the Dutchman's Treasure. You guys get ready for this iconic episode that is about to occur.
Okay, but no, it's not called the Whaley House because it's a giant. Alyssa's face is just so disappointed right now.
Okay. It's not called the Whaley House because it's a giant whale house.
Oh, it's not. You really had me going there, Talia.
It's called the Whaley House because Thomas Whaley purchased the property and he was a 49er. He came to California from New York City in 1849 during the gold rush. He left New York City, the place of his birth, on January 1st, 1849, and he arrived 204 days later in San Francisco, which was his first mistake. Why did it take him 204 days to get from New York City to San Francisco, Alyssa?
Probably because he was on a covered wagon.
Really? Is that how they didn't have trains?
I don't know, but I know that a lot of people during the gold rush came over just like in wagons.
I couldn't figure it out. So I went, like, I thought that there was trains around then, right? But I don't know. So then I Googled and I tried to find like an account of someone coming from 1849 as like a 49er. And I found one. This is an article written by Edward McLanney's. McLanney called The Days of 49, and it was written by a 49er who actually came from there. And I'm just going to read you a small excerpt of it, okay?
Okay.
So that way we can kind of like see what it was like.
Yeah, paint the picture. I gotcha.
Paint the picture. I won't do a voice. I was really thinking about doing it.
No, do a voice. Do a voice. We're in too deep at this point. Just do a voice.
At the age of 20, the great discovery... No, that wouldn't be right. What does a California 49er sound like?
Like someone that has very few teeth left and just came out of a brothel and...
Right. Okay.
Yeah, has syphilis and cheated on his wife and got his very first pair of Levi's.
God, what a fucking judgmental bitch you are.
No, I'm serious. Brothels helped, like... bring money and prosperity during the gold rush. Like prostitutes, because at the time they weren't called sex workers, they were called prostitutes, worked in these brothels on the West Coast. And it was a way for women to make their own money that like previously had not happened yet. There's all these books written about it. It's super dope. And also Levi Strauss made his very first pair of jeans during the time of the gold rush. I remember that from, fifth grade.
Oh, wow.
Because there was this song. Alyssa. No, I'm not done. There was this. If this is a shitpost, I'm going to keep going. But there was this song in fifth grade for our Gold Rush play, and it went, Mr. Levi Strauss has got his canvas. Making tents was getting too routine. Now he has got his scissors and his rivets. He's found a fit in blue jeans. And then you jump up and you like pretend to pull your jeans on. It was pretty great. Oh,
that's really cute.
Yeah.
Wow.
Gold Duster Bus.
Let's do the whole episode about that.
Yeah.
About the play.
That's really exciting. Hey, anybody else out there in fifth grade currently? And if so, did you do the Gold Duster Bus play? Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay, go ahead.
No, we did a play about September 11th when I was in fourth grade. What? It was called America Let's Roll, and we all wore American flag t-shirts, and we straight up, like, acted out, like, a man, like, okay, so there was this one guy on one of the planes who made a call, like, to his wife and, like, said goodbye and everything, and then, like, he was like, America, let's roll, and they, like, it's the one that crashed into the ground in Pennsylvania.
I remember that, yeah they diverted the plane because they fought back, and so less lives were lost.
Right, but, like, that was what our fucking fifth grade play was about.
Oh, my God, that's so Oklahoma. That is, like,
I know
Bible Belt behavior.
I know, it was peak Bible Belt behavior, and the hardest part was we had to wear an American flag t-shirt, but all of the American flag t-shirts were sold out, like, all over the state. Like, if you went into any Old Navy or any Hobby Lobby or, like, anywhere, like, a Gap, anywhere, you could not get a shirt that had an American flag on it because everyone was wearing American flag shirts after 9/11. Did you guys also have that problem in Ventura?
I don't know. I do remember being in school, and all I remember is the principal came into all of the classrooms and was like, hey, something happened this morning, I need to talk to you guys about it, like, this is what's going on, you're okay, you're safe, like, but this is, like, really serious shit, we're probably gonna go to war, and, like, we're gonna have a lockdown drill later this week just in case, like, some stuff starts happening in California. And that's really all I remember. I don't remember wearing American flags. I don't remember doing a play. I just remember the principal was like, okay, we're going to have some more lockdown drills.
Yeah, no, that's not what I remember. I remember getting like drilled with like patriotism. But you know what? This episode really has something for everyone in it, doesn't it?
Okay, so here's my article by here's the first witness account by a man who was a part of the Gold Rush. His memoir starts, chapter one. At the age of 20, the great discovery of gold in California fired my heart with ambition to see the wild, wild west. And as Horace Greeley advised, go west, young man, go west and grow up with the country. One motive which caused this desire was disappointment in my first love affair, and I wanted to get far away, and try to forget. I welcomed the lines of the poet. There is a pleasure in the pathless woods. There is a rapture on the lonely shore. There is a society where none intrude by the deep sea and music in its roar. Hearing of the company being formed in Charleston, Jefferson County, Virginia, 10 miles west of Harper's Ferry, the place where John Brown made his raid to free the slaves, I realized that here was the opportunity. The company that was formed to start to California March 3rd, 49. There were three men from my neighborhood that had joined this company, and one of these men, Ed Hooper, was going to Charleston to pay his dues. So I went with him to try to join the same 10-spot party. We rode horseback and forded the Shenandoah River. He rode a large horse, and mine was small. And about halfway across, my horse commenced swimming and swam to shore. I was soaking wet from head to foot, but happy in the thought that my hopes might soon be realized. Hooper made fun of me, but said, Mick, you've got nerve enough to make a good one across the plains. We reached Charleston by night, and stopping at the hotel, ate a hearty supper, as you can imagine. There were about 50 guests at the hotel, most of whom had tried to come to join the company. They asked how I came to be so wet. I told them I had swum the river in my anxiety to join the company. They were amused and remarked, you've got nerve, and said also, we are here for the purpose of joining the company. We fear, however, we're too late, as we have been informed the quota of 75 is full. My heart fell. And then he goes on to basically say that the like band of people that they're going with is 75 and that they might be too late to go, because I guess like you go out in these camps, you pay someone like $300 and then they like take you and they like pack you out and you go to California. So then
wait,
he says,
when you're reading this and you're going over this and editing it, can you please put old timey music in the background?
Yes.
like pack horse chains rattling and like someone ringing the triangle calling people for supper and they're eating beans
supper.
And biscuits.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
So
okay.
40 of these applicants were made to stand in a row to be examined physically, and I fortunately was the fifth and last one to be taken on, which naturally gave me great joy. I then went to the secretary and I gave him the $300 required to become a member of the company, which was called the Charleston Jefferson County, Virginia Mining Company. Each member was given a rubber sack with the company's mark on it to use in carrying his clothing. The 3rd of March, 1849, a day never to be forgotten, was the date set for our departure. I returned to my home, reached there as the family were eating supper, and threw my sack on the floor, remarking that I was a member of the company destined to cross the plains to California. Still buoyant with the hope and anticipation, the date for starting came, and I bade a sad farewell to my family and reached Charleston in time to join the company on March 3rd. There were hundreds of our friends to bid us goodbye, fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, wives, sweethearts, and even old family darkies, all with tears in their eyes.
What?
For they knew not our way. Old family darkies, Alyssa.
Well, all right. And moving on.
I'm just reading his account, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then he says, we reached Harper's Ferry at noon. Then we took the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad to Cumberland, Maryland, the terminus of the road at that time.
Father met me at Harper's Ferry with tears in his eyes the first time I ever saw him shed. He said, "My son, here is a 12-hymn book from a Bible from your mother and myself. I would rather give you the $1,000 than have you leave me today." But I replied, "Father, it's for the best."
And then he basically goes on the rest of this memoir, and he talks about how of these 75 men crossing the plains, by the time they got there, like, 4 of them had died.
Right.
It was actually like a really, yeah, it was like a really tumultuous trip. And like, it's crazy how they died. A lot of it was just freak accidents. Like, one guy was like packing his gun and he accidentally dropped it, and then it like shot him in the hip.
Oh, geez.
And then they called the doctor to come like try to save him, and he couldn't, and he just knew he was gonna die. And so he's telling everyone, like, "Man, I know I'm gonna die, but I'm actually most bummed about the fact that, like, my mom's not gonna have like a grave for me. You know, I'm gonna be buried out here on the plains, like, hundreds Jeez. Of miles away from my home with no one around me." And they're just like, "Yep, well, see you later." And then he died.
Wait, they leave him?
Well, he died, and then they buried him on the plains.
Oh, okay.
They, like, but yeah, like, it would, that sucks. Like, getting, like, dying on an expedition, you know, no one's going to see your body, or, yeah, you're just kind of being lonely out there. I felt really bad for him. So that makes sense why now it's, like, so hard to come out. I don't know. I couldn't find anything about, like, actual Thomas Whaley saying how he got to out there. It just says it took him 204 days. So
yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, you're crossing the plains on a pack mule or a horse or a covered wagon.
And then what happened next was the most terrifying story of American history.
I wish you guys could see how insane Natalia looks right now.
Okay, Alyssa, are you ready for spooky time?
I have been ready to be spooked for several days. I am ready for this.
So Thomas Whaley, he's a 49er. He comes from New York City to California during the gold rush. And he gets to California finally. He sets up a store with this guy named George Wardle on Montgomery Street, where he sold hardware and woodwork from his family's New York business, which was called Pine Whaley. His store sold mining equipment and utensils on consignment, which I think is really smart, right? Because it's like B2B, you know, like business to business. That's how, like, the majority of businesses that are like super huge are B2B businesses, where you're not like he's not being a gold digger. He's selling, or not a gold digger. He's not.
He's
being
literally
a gold
being
miner.
A gold digger.
He's selling the equipment that everyone needs to be a gold miner
right.
to them. And I'm like, this is a real smart businessman, because when you hear your son wants to be a 49er, and you're like, "Okay, sir, pro football is a really risky career choice." But then it turns out that he's actually an 1849 immigrant who had dreams of selling mining accessories. You're like, "Okay, that's the American dream."
I just rolled my eyes so hard.
So Whaley came from a Scots-Irish family, which was immigrated to Plymouth, Massachusetts in 1722. And his great-grandfather, Alexander Whaley, was a gunsmith who participated in the Boston Tea Party and the Revolutionary War, where he provided flintlock muskets for soldiers and the use of his house on Long Island by General George Washington. And Thomas's father, Thomas Whaley, carried on the same family guns business and served in the New York militia during the War of 1812. And he married this girl named Rachel Pye, whose father was manufacturing locks in Brooklyn. So he is, like, literally, like, the American dream. So Whaley sets up several businesses and he works really hard. And then he amasses enough money to return to New York to marry his sweetheart, Anna Eloise Lene, who's the daughter of French parents, on May 14th. 1853, which is really funny to think, like, a guy's gonna go out and he's like, "I'm gonna go, you know what, this girl's not gonna pay attention to me right now, but here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go away for a while and I'm gonna get really rich and then I'm gonna come back and try again." So upon the couple's return to San Diego, Whaley purchases the property, the Whaley House, in September 1855, which had been the site of a hanging of the infamous Yankee Jim Robinson in August of 1852. So this Yankee Jim Robinson was this horse thief guy who was like also a gold dude. Like he was a 49er. Here's the short story of it. He was a 49er crook thief man. He came to California to this like random town that wasn't even, it wasn't even a town at the time. It was just like a piece of grass and trees. And he came there and he found gold. But then like you don't want people to know you have gold because then they're going to come and start mining. So to be inconspicuous, he just puts like a huge corral of horses out there and like told people that he was like a horse guy. And that was his business.
That's smart.
Yeah. But people figure it out and then they come all over there and like within minutes everything sucks. Like they build up a whole town around him and then the town gets like arson to it and there's like, it's like that, you know when there's like gunfights in the streets and stuff and like old western timey movies?
Yeah.
It's like that. And so then there's this big fire and he kind of has to flee the town and he runs away because he also like stole people's horses and they chased him out of town. And then he gets to San Diego and people find out they're here and they're like, no, we don't like this. And so then they build gallows and they like literally hang him in these makeshift gallows. And he's like 6'4". He's a really tall dude. So it was hard to hang him because not many people were that tall then. So like, the way that they did it is they put the noose around your neck and then they had a wagon and they would just pull the wagon out from underneath you and then you would hang. But because he was so tall, when they pulled the wagon out from underneath him, he first of all could like reach the wagon for a really long time. So as they're pulling it, he's like going sideways. And then when the wagon finally leaves, he like swings back and forth like a pendulum. Ugh. And it's like really gross and he strangles to death and dies and his like toes can like kind of touch the ground because he's so tall. So it was just like a really sort of miserable death.
That's very gruesome, yeah.
And Thomas Whaley was in the crowd watching this execution and then decides that he's going to buy that plot of land to build his house on.
Thomas Whaley sounds like a very haunted man. If I watched somebody die a very grisly murder on a piece of property, my first thought would be, how do I get away from here? Not how do I buy this land?
I think he was just like a businessman. He was thinking like the whole time the execution was going, he was probably thinking like, I wonder who owns this land here.
Yeah. Or maybe he like saw an opportunity because he was like, nobody's going to want to buy this. Someone just died a horrific death here. I bet you I can get this at a discount.
Right. That's exactly what happened. And so in August of 1857, Whaley established his general store at the residence and solicited cash customers only. The location proved too far from the center of the small community, so he relocated his business into a frame building and a plaza, which he rented. So then in 1858, Thomas and Anna Whaley produced three children, Frances Hinton, named for a business partner, Thomas, and Anna Amelia. And then in August of 1858, an arson set fire, destroyed Whaley's business on the plaza, and at the same time, his son Thomas, who was only 18 months, died of scarlet fever.
Oh man, the olden times, that's why people had so many kids. It was just, you were lucky if you had 10 kids, you were lucky if two made it to adulthood. So you kind of had to keep having kids if you wanted your bloodline to continue.
You gotta hedge your bets against each other.
Yeah.
So Thomas Whaley is obviously really sad over the loss of his son, and also this fire burns down their business. So he moves to San Francisco, and then several years later in 1868, the Whaley family, which is his wife and five children, return to the home. And upon that return to the home, something very haunted happened, Alyssa.
Uh-oh.
Do you know what happened?
I'm trying to remember what the person that wrote in the listener story said. They didn't tell us the story, but I think they said that some people die in the house. So I'm wondering if somebody... So you said the child has died, the 18-month-old has died in the house.
The baby.
Maybe yes. Some... Does, like, the mom go crazy or something because she lost her baby?
So on January 5th, 1882, Violet Whaley and Anna Amelia Whaley marry in Old Town San Diego, probably in that house. They're not really sure, but they think that it was in the house. And Anna marries her first cousin, John T. No. Whaley. And Violet marries George T. Bertolacci, which proved unbearable. They had a grisly divorce. It was a horrible divorce. And Violet was super, super humiliated. And she had
horrible depression where she had to see the local doctor about it, and she multiple times tried to throw herself into the cistern, which is where they store water, and she was just really, really, really depressed, and eventually she committed suicide at the home by shooting herself through the heart on August 8th, 1855. Really sad. And after that tragic event, Thomas Whaley built a single-story frame home for his family at a different location, because that house was haunted, I'm assuming. And he was trying to capitalize on the boom in that area, so he went over there with various partners. And then he died in 1888 due to ill health at the State Street address. So he didn't die in the house, but he died at the State Street address. And then the Whaley House in San Diego Avenue remained vacant and fell into disrepair until late 1909, when Francis Whaley returned to the old brick and undertook the restoration of the building, which greatly improved its appearance. And then, so after that, Francis utilized his family home as a residence and a tourist attraction, where he posted signs outside promoting its historicity and entertained visitors with his guitar. And then Anna, Thomas's widow Lillian, the assistant, and Francis and George all lived at the old dwelling in 1912, and on February 24th, 1913, Anna died in the house. Francis passed away in the home on November 19th, 1914, and then Lillian continued residency in the structure until her own death in 1953. So basically everyone died in that house except for Thomas Whaley.
Okay.
Basically what I'm telling you is that this house is super haunted.
So let me recap. We've got, you're telling me that Thomas Whaley does like a crazy wagon trip probably across the United States from New York,
where multiple people probably died.
Yeah, to San Francisco during the gold rush. He is smart. He's a businessman. So he doesn't want to actually do the dirty work of going and like digging up the gold. So he instead starts a business where he's selling tools to the gold mine people.
And who are all like gold crazy.
Right. Okay. Then there's this outlaw thief guy who's super fucking tall, and he's gonna go get hung because he's a thief. And so he's like, you know what would be a great idea? I want to go watch this. I would like to see the light leave a man's eyes. So he goes and he watches this horrible grisly murder, hanging death of this thief who's so tall that he takes forever to die, and he's swinging back and forth, and he gets strangled to death, whereas normally when someone is hung it's like super quick because their neck snaps and they die. But this guy was so fucking tall that his toes kind of touched the ground, so his neck never snapped. Instead he just slowly strangled to death. And as Thomas Whaley is watching this man die this horrible death, he's like, you know what? I bet nobody else is going to want to buy this land that this man died on. And in fact, you know, what a great piece of property, because it's kind of in the city center of this up and coming place. So he purchases it, builds a store, and then he decides, you know what? Actually, I would rather build my store elsewhere and use this structure as my home. So he goes and builds a store elsewhere, but then it burns down due to arson, which is haunted. And then he comes back to his house, has a bunch of kids with his wife. One of them dies of scarlet fever pretty much immediately. Then the other one gets, the older daughter gets married and then goes through a horrible divorce, which is not okay in that time. Like, people were not okay with divorce, I'm assuming. And she's super depressed.
Or marrying your first cousin.
Yeah, you know, honestly, if there's like only five people in a town and all of them are 90 years old except for your first cousin, he might start looking pretty good at that point. So I guess, like, what are your options? Marry your first cousin or be alone for the rest of your life? She chose to marry her first cousin, can't fault her for that at the time, but ends up being alone for the rest of her life, probably because he cheated on her, I'm assuming. And then she's like super depressed, trying to kill herself all the time, and for some reason Thomas Whaley thinks it's a good idea to leave his gun around his super depressed daughter, who's already tried to kill herself multiple times, has sought help from a doctor for depression. He leaves his gun around her. She shoots herself through the heart. So not through the head, where it would be like more of an immediate death, but through the heart. And then she dies inside their home. So now we've had the 18-month that dies and his older daughter that dies. And then who died next?
And they all die.
But of old age, or did anyone else die of suicide or?
No. Anna died in the house, and then Francis passed away in the home, and then Lillian died in the house of old age. I don't think there was any more murders. I didn't hear about that, but
okay.
Yeah. And then the architect that actually built the museum for the home threw himself off of the building as well.
Oh, gee.
So it's just a really sketch place. And in her suicide note, she quotes this quote that I didn't copy because it was too sad, but it was basically saying, like, I can't wait to have my heart out of my body. I don't want to be on this earth anymore. I don't want a heart anymore because it just is too much to bear.
That's so sad.
It's very sad. So over the years, plenty of visitors to the house have encountered ghostly phenomena when it's within its walls. Thomas Whaley's ghost is often seen, especially on the upper landing. And if you look into your haunted email right now, Alyssa, you will see a very haunted letter from a certain haunted person from a haunted podcast called Let's Get Haunted. And it has a very haunted start time of 4 minutes and 20 seconds and a very not so haunted, but therefore is haunted ending time of 6 minutes and 7 seconds, which if you think about it, haunted.
Okay, so let me go to 420 Blaze It in this video. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Watch the video.
Okay, hold on.
So this is a video from Ghost Adventures because they went to the Whaley house and I found the best part and just gave it to you guys.
Okay.
And it's this picture that this woman has where you can see an apparition.
Got it. Okay, Ghost Adventures, Whaley House, Season 9, Episode 11. I am pushing play.
Hey, Maritza.
Hey.
How are you, Zach Reagans?
How you doing, Maritza?
Pretty good. Hey. How are you?
So it's very important in our investigations to always reach out into the paranormal community. What I learned about you, and Nick, I was telling you this, is that she is founder of the San Diego Ghost Hunters.
Yes.
And you've been doing investigations here for the last
10 years.
10 years.
Wow. 10 years.
I told you she's got a cool photo.
Yeah, you were telling me all about this. You were really excited when you called me up and said we got to interview her today.
Okay, so I'm going to explain to our listeners what's going on. There are three people sitting in the Whaley house, one woman and two men. The two men are from Ghost Adventures, and the woman, they just introduced her as a paranormal expert who has been studying the Whaley house.
This one really jumped out at me.
Good.
This was really friggin' cool and creepy.
Oh, wow.
Tell me exactly what we're looking at, because what I see here is this figure is not reflecting back through the glass pane.
No, it's open. Yes.
Okay. So to me, it looks like a figure of a man, mm-hmm. a person. It looks like a hand here, an arm, a very profound head, neck, torso. To me, it looks like he's coming through the window.
Yeah.
As if he's trying to, you know, crawl through the window.
So they're showing, she took some photos in the Whaley house. And in one of the photos, they're zooming in on it right now. It looks like there's a man in the background, like a ghost man.
Tell us exactly the conditions. What was going on?
Well, we had just done the tour. We give a once a month tour here in the house. So we had just finished. We got everyone outside. And I was upstairs and we took this picture. This is Jokey, one of the docents right there.
Jokey Tolentino has been a docent at the Whaley House for 13 years. When we meet her, she talks about the eerie connection she has to the spirits here.
A lot of the stuff that I've seen in here, and I believe 6 apparitions. 2 of them were gentlemen, the other 4 were females, but they were always turned away or walking away from me.
You never see their faces, do you?
They don't let me see their face.
Why don't they let you see their faces?
I think that they feel more comfortable that I'm just here and that they don't need to confront me. That's at least my theory in it.
Did Jokey see this figure?
No, I don't think she did.
Okay, where's Jokey? Can you come around here for a second? We're looking at a photo here. Have you seen this photo before?
No, I haven't seen this.
Oh, that's creepy.
This figure is clearly what appears to be standing out on the roof because you could see the bottom of it cut off right here where the window sill is. Do you allow people on the roof?
Definitely not.
No, we didn't know that was you. And then once we found out, Nick made the connection and what you told us earlier.
Yeah.
You know, when we were interviewing you, how these spirits follow you around.
What's even more chilling is that the spirit is looking away from Jokey, not showing her its face, just like she told us they always do.
Are you okay?
At the moment?
So basically, the Ghost Adventures guys are talking to two employees who are paranormal investigators slash give tours throughout the Whaley House. They said they do tours once a month to the public. And one of the women was taking photos of some of the guests that were on the tour. So there's like people coming up the stairs, walking around the house. And there is a man. It's very clearly a figure, like a see-through man. Like he's got, I think they call it like a full body apparition. It's got like a head, neck, shoulders, torso. You can't see the legs, but you can very clearly see like the upper part of a man. And he's coming in.
Yeah, and he's dressed in like 1800s clothes.
Yeah, and he's coming in through a window where like you're not allowed into that area is what the employees are explaining. Like you can't go out that window and just be like coming in through it. So he's coming in
a way that's like not human. Like a human can't just like walk in through a window. You would have to climb into it, you know?
Right, exactly. And the other thing is, one of the employees is explaining that she sees apparitions there all the time, but that they never allow her to see their faces. So what she'll see is she'll see like the back of an apparition like floating through a wall, or like an old timey dress like billowing, like just the cloth going around the corner, right? And in that picture, what's interesting is that apparition is not showing its face to the person taking the picture. It's looking down into the side. And so the woman that works there that has had all of these encounters is seeing this photo for the first time. And she's saying basically like, I'm getting chills because I've seen this apparition in the house before. And once again, it's not allowing me to see its face.
It's really spooky, huh?
That is really spooky.
Feeling tingles?
So many tingles. And I was also, so at the bottom, it had like a Google targeted ad for me at the bottom of that YouTube video. And it said that the Whaley House gives tours. So technically, we could even go to that house and we could take a tour of it someday if we really wanted to.
I've been to that house. I went to that house when I was 16 or 15.
Oh,
I was
really?
Like visiting California. Yeah, it was my first time to ever come to California. We went to San Diego. I remember it very clearly. And we went to that house. And it was my first time to ever tour a haunted house. And I thought it was going to be like ghosts coming out of every corner. Like, you know, I was like so scared to go in. Like I was treating it as if it was a roller coaster. Like I was about to go on this insane ride. And then like we got in and like I was like looking around and everyone was just like tourists. And I was kind of like, these people like have the balls to come in here? Like what? And then, yeah, I remember like trying to kind of like hang in the back of the tour and stuff and being scared. And my dad like kept like tapping me on the shoulder and I would be like, ah!
Wait, so when you did the tour, did you go during the day or at night?
There's like a gas, so it's in the old part of San Diego, like the gas lamp district area, mm-hmm. kind of over there. And there's like, it was like an attraction. Yeah, so we went at night. I went like, I think it was before dinner maybe.
And did you like see anything weird or did you feel anything weird or was it like, was there like a bad vibe or was it just like a house, any other house?
It was a horrible vibe. Yeah, I was terrified the whole time. Like I was in one of the, like I think now as an adult, because I have more experience with this too, like I wouldn't be as scared. But at that time, that was my first time to ever go into anything that like called itself haunted. So I was like expecting, you know, to just see like a full on ghost there like, hello, welcome to my home.
Right.
So, but it was a very creepy, creepy house. And, you know, it's old. So like all, you're walking around and everything's like creaking and cracking. And they've got a lot of like old furniture in there and old gas lamps and stuff. And if nothing else, even if you don't believe in ghosts or anything like that, just to see how people lived at that time was pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting that that's the house they chose to preserve too. I mean, I think of like in modern times, right? If there was a house where maybe like a triple homicide occurred or somebody killed themselves, like a suicide, and like a bunch of other people died of natural causes and then a baby died of scarlet fever, you know, whatever. But in modern mm-hmm. times, if that happened, I feel like the owner of the home would at the very least do a complete remodel. You know what I mean? Like you'd knock down everything but one wall and then rebuild the house, or you would demolish right. it and rebuild. Like I can't imagine something like that happening in modern times and then it turning into a landmark. I'm even thinking of like some of the homes in LA, like the LA Murder House, for example, in Los Feliz.
Yes.
Even that house, people still like live in it. You know, like it's like a current operating home. It hasn't been turned into a landmark, I guess is my point. So it's really interesting that San Diego thought that this home was creepy and significant enough that they wanted to preserve it and turn it into this tourist attraction rather than like demolishing it or renting it out, or you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting that the town had the forethought in the 1800s or 1900s, whenever the last person died, to preserve this home.
When Mrs. Whaley was still living there, like, it was rumored to be haunted. So little kids and stuff would like come up on the lawn and get scared, and then she would invite, because they thought that Yankee Jim was haunting the house, so they would come in and like try to see like this really tall man, you know, like ghost in there. Oh, and then she would creepy. Invite them in and give them cookies and milk and even tell them like ghost stories about the house.
Oh, whoa. So she was a good sport.
Yeah, she was a very good sport.
Yeah, she was turning tragedy into something that would bring the community together, right? Because even though it was probably very traumatic that her daughter died in that home, she's like, mm-hmm. okay, I get it. Like, everyone's creeped out by this house. Like, let me just invite people in and like have a sense of community and show people that I'm not scary and like kind of entertain people. So that's cool. She's like kind of turning it into a positive.
And then I sent you another link to a video that has a photo that a visitor took. Okay. And the photo is pretty creepy too. There was like a lot of ghost pictures, but a lot of them were orbs or like weird shadows or things. And those ones I don't think are as interesting as like the full apparition. Because to me, a full apparition is like insane. Like, you can't just chalk that up to like a piece of dust floating in the air, you right know?
Got it. Okay, so this is a YouTube video titled Whaley House Ghost Photograph that was uploaded 12 years ago on the YouTube channel Terry M. West, and I am at 2 minutes and 40 seconds. Let's see what this is about.
So I just snapped that one picture I had left and I went home. I went through my photos the night before, noticed a couple, you know, chalked them up to natural things, nothing paranormal, and went to bed. The next morning I got up and I went through my pictures again. And when I got to that last picture I took, the picture that I took simply because I only had one photo left on the card, I noticed something funny on the left side of the kitchen window. I zoomed in on that, expecting to see a vase or, you know, something possibly on the dining room table. And what I was faced with was what seems to be a translucent apparition. Oh. And it's wedged right in between the outside window and of the kitchen and the inside window of the dining room.
So you don't have to watch the whole thing. But basically he's saying he went and saw this apparition, and then he took a bunch of photos at night of the house, and then the next morning he's checking his photos and he sees one that has an apparition in it, and he's making sure that he didn't just, you know, like get a reflection of a portrait or something in the house. So he goes back in the house and sees that there's no portraits in that room that would be reflected, and then he tries to recreate the photo with a friend to make sure it's not just like someone with him that's causing the reflection, and they couldn't get the photo again. And then he went and asked people who it was that worked at the Whaley house, and they all said that it looked like Thomas Whaley.
Yeah, it was very creepy. I'll describe what I saw and what I was thinking when I watched that for the first time. So basically, like Natalia said, he took a photo with the flash on of a window. And if you zoom in, it didn't look like a adult man. To me, it looked like a child. It was like,
really?
It looked like a girl in a younger girl in a dress. Maybe a young adult, but it looks like to me, a young girl in a dress just standing there staring at him. I'm getting the chills right now. We're going to post it to the Instagram account, but it's literally like, you know, like feet in a, like maybe like shoulder width apart, like hands down at the side staring at him. And to me, that's like a fighting stance, right? It's like this person is like ready, like looking like, hey, what are you doing here? It's like,
what are you doing in my house?
Yeah. It's like, it's not a passive pose. It's, and it's looking right at him. Oh my God. I'm just like, I'm getting the chills. I'm freaking myself out. That was so very creepy.
Creepy. Yeah. Like, I wonder if it followed him from there.
Yeah. Ugh. Super creepy. I know. I always wonder too, like, do you think that these ghosts are like have to stay in that home? Are they like bound to that home, or do you think that they can follow people out? I don't know. I always just wonder.
Well, Thomas Whaley didn't die in the house, and he haunts the house.
Oh, so he made his way back there.
I mean, I think spirits can follow you, and we will always cite back to Alyssa and I going to the psychic who told me I had a spirit attached to me after we went on a haunted road trip and stayed in the Jameson Hotel.
Yeah,
I was like trying to scare Alyssa and taunting one of the ghosts that lives in the room, and you're supposed to like leave a shot of whiskey out for the ghost, but I was like, Alyssa was all freaked out, and I was like, you know, like tapping her shoulder and trying to scare her and like shaking her when she was taking pictures and stuff, just being a dick.
And I almost dropped my phone into the room because you were shaking me. It's like this old-timey Wild West hotel with like, it still has the original ceiling. So there's bullet holes in the ceiling from like, because when people got pissed in the Wild West, they just shot each other. And especially in like saloons and stuff.
Simpler times.
And so they have this one room that you can't stay in because somebody was murdered in it. And it has all the original furniture from the 1800s. And the door is so old that it's like kind of hanging off its hinges, but they like put a new lock on so it locks. But my point is there's like a 2-inch gap between the door frame and the door at the top. So I'm sticking my phone through trying to like get Snapchats or pictures, because this was a long time ago when Snapchat was still relevant. And Natalia's like, oh, oh, hey, like shaking me. Like I almost dropped my phone into this locked, haunted 1800s room. It has all these shots of whiskey on the top of the door frame because people, as a sign of respect for the murder victim, would leave these shots of whiskey, which was his favorite drink. Now, Natalia, being very haunted, is like, oh, 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 and like drank some of the whiskey. I was like, what are you doing, you haunted bitch? And then when we got back to LA, she saw a psychic because she was having like a bunch of bad luck all in a row and just feeling really
and
like,
nightmares.
Yeah, nightmares and like you
crazy
you,
nightmares.
You woke yourself up screaming or laughing. That's what it was.
Laughing.
Yeah. And
I kept waking up laughing.
Yeah. And the psychic was like, as soon as Natalia walked in, was like, this is really bad. Like there you have a problem. And I've never seen something this bad before. Mm-hmm. You have a spirit attached to you. Have you done anything like that you shouldn't have done recently, like playing with a Ouija board or something? And Natalia's like, well, I did drink some whiskey that a haunted ghost like was put out for its sign of respect. And the psychic lady was like, why in God's name would you do that? And then she said, we need to burn a candle your height and weight in a church with your clothes on it so that the spirit thinks the candle is you and it goes and attacks that candle. And then when it burns all the way down, the spirit will think that it has destroyed you.
Yeah, and then meanwhile she was gonna do like,
yeah,
it was a scam and I didn't do it, but I'm still haunted, so maybe it wasn't a scam.
Maybe it wasn't, but she wanted to charge you like $200 or something. It was like a dollar a pen, I don't remember. It was like,
yeah, it was like $200.
Yeah, it was too much money.
But it was gonna burn for 30 days and 30 nights, so I think it was a deal. So well, in that house, a bunch of apparitions are seen. People see Thomas Whaley's ghost, especially on the upper landing, which is what that first photo I showed you was. And then other encounters include Thomas Whaley's wife, Anna Whaley, in the downstairs room or garden, the Whaley's dog, Dolly, and one parapsychologist even claimed that they saw a dog running down the hall into the dining room.
Oh.
And then another visitor felt a dog brush up against his leg.
Ew.
And then the list of people, and people hear the heavy footsteps of Yankee Jim, and the Whaleys, when they lived in that house, always heard the footsteps of Yankee Jim. Like they said that it sounded like this really large man's footsteps walking around, kind of like rough and heavy.
Right.
And so they thought that that was Yankee Jim's spirit.
Ooh.
And then
a bunch of people have visited this house because when you go to San Diego, it's like one of the main attractions there. And so the comedian Tom Green called out to spirits in one room and he was answered by a child's voice, according to him. He like stayed there overnight, and there's like a video about that online. You can look that up if you want to see it. We're not going to watch it because it's like so over the top. It's like Tom Green and he's like, I'm in a museum, and it's like na 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 na, and just like a bunch of different like cuts of his face at different angles. You know how they like do that shit?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also Tom Green, for those of you who aren't 90s babies, that was like a very 90s comedy. It was like a lot of potty humor, a lot of screaming, a lot of like, I can't even describe. He had a song called My Bum, and it was like, I like to put my bum on things. It's fun for everyone. And it was like the music video would be on MTV all the time. And then Eminem did a parody of it. But
yeah, he's very like immature and very like silly.
Yeah. Yeah. Very silly. And he dated Drew Barrymore. Can you believe that? At the height of his fame. Actually, he married her.
Wow.
He married her.
Really?
Yeah. And then they got a divorce. And she did an interview later being like, that was the biggest mistake of my life. I was on a lot of drugs or something like that. I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like that. It was like, yeah, I was partying all the time. That was a huge mistake. I should not have married Tom Green.
That's rude.
I know. That is rude.
For Tom Green.
I know.
How could you say that about Tom Green, who sees ghosts? We stan.
Yeah, we stan anyone that sees a ghost.
And then Regis Philbin, we also stand.
Oh, because I love Regis.
He visited the Whaley House in 1964 and saw what he thought was the ghostly presence of Anna Whaley, which he called, quote, a filmy white apparition that appeared in front of her portrait. And the television personality was later quoted as saying, you know, a lot of people poo-poo it because they can't see it, but there was definitely something going on in that house.
Yeah, if Regis Philbin says he saw something, I believe that more than if Tom Green says that he saw something. Because Tom Green's whole existence is a shitpost, like, in terms of, like, his public persona. Whereas Regis Philbin is, like, a very serious, well-respected, just, like, all-around nice guy. So, yeah. I think if Regis Philbin says that he saw or experienced something paranormal, I tend to believe that.
Other spirits who people claim to have seen are baby Thomas, who was the first in the family to pass away. He always stayed close by, as reported by many who visited the homes. And they could hear tiny footsteps, the sounds of him crying, and even giggling when there was no one there in the house. Others report seeing a young woman lingering on the second floor of the home, believed to be poor Violet, still consumed with sorrow. She seems to stay close to the second floor, where she spent much of her time after her divorce, before she committed suicide. It is said that areas within the home become quite cold and her presence is felt throughout. Thomas, Anna, and several other spirits have also been felt within the home on the stairwells and in the property. Many have seen Thomas dressed in his frock, coat, and top hat standing at the top of the stairs. Others say they could smell the aroma of French perfume, Anna's signature scent. Miss, lights turning off and on by themselves, crystals in the music room's lamp swinging without any prompt, all the signs that the Whaley House still belongs to the many who call it home over the years. And although no one has lived in the house since 1953, the spirits of the dead are still there, waiting for visitors. Workers on the site and guests who've toured the home tell accounts of many unusual and spooky encounters. Some say they've even seen a figure looking out the stairs window long after the house is closed for the day. Others have seen curtains moving, even though all the windows in the home have been sealed shut. The sounds of children running up and down the stairs can be heard without anyone being seen. Footsteps, cold spots, the appearance and disappearance of shadows have all been seen, felt, and heard by guests. This is the Whaley House. That's also a whale with a giant
I was creeped out, and then now I'm just picturing a giant whale. Okay, Natalia, I have to stop you and tell you this real quick. So throughout the time that we've been recording, like the last, I would say maybe for the last 30 minutes, my phone has been acting really fucking haunted. It's doing this thing where it plays a busy tone in my ear.
Why?
And I can't hear you at all. And then my phone is like, it'll show like the volume and it keeps going up and down, up and down, up and down while you're talking. And then it just goes beep, beep, beep in my, yeah. I don't know what that means.
I just heard, yeah, the volume just went out. I just heard it. It did it for mine too. That is 100% the governor is listening to us.
Governor Newsom is like, no, you can't talk about the Whaley house.
Well, I think the FBI people are interested because they're like, there's a house that's also a whale?
Oh, man. Well, that was a great story, Natalia.
Thanks. Yeah, very so I want to hear, very haunted. I want to hear your thoughts on it. Do you think that the pictures that people are taking are those apparitions, do you think that those are authentic?
It's always tough when it's pictures of ghosts because you could chalk it up to a lot of things like smudges on the lens, smudge on a window, someone outside the window, somebody behind the person taking the photo. Like if you're not there, it's kind of hard to say, right? But I think that this house is definitely haunted because there's too much tragedy that's happened there. And if we believe that humans are made of energy,
right,
and that energy can remain after someone dies, then I think that there's a case to be made about like the more horrific the death or the more sadness or sorrow, the more energy might be left behind. So I definitely think that this place is haunted. And that picture of that person in the window, like in a fighting stance, yeah, staring back at the guy taking a photo, that gave me chills. That, right, made me very uncomfortable and creeped out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think just, first of all, the like the intention. So the type of energy that you attract, right? Because like I think everybody attracts energy all the time, can either be positive or negative. And I think like we always say positive hauntings only. And if the gold rush is literally comprised of people who are leaving their homes, leaving their wives, their families behind, after this like pipe dream of finding gold, which is essentially like the old timey, oh, I'm going to go get famous, or I'm going to strike like riches or whatever. It's like taking a huge risk. Like that guy even quoted in his memoir that like his father gave him a Bible and said, hey, you know, I'll give you $1,000 if you don't go do this. And he was like, no, I'm putting my stuff in this rubber sack and I'm getting on this horse and I'm never going to see y'all again. That, like, you have all these, like, money-hungry, random, transient people who are willing to die for money, basically, all getting together. And then he's selling them tools to go, like, mine, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's like these people that take my headshots are super haunted because they know. They know that, like, they're part of a bullshit industry that just, like, works on broken dreams and false promises. And they're like, you know, capitalizing on that. So definitely haunted. And the fact that Yankee Jim, who was a huge scammer, was literally executed on that spot, like, it's just got bad vibes all over it. And then the architect who built the museum for the Whaley House threw himself off of the structure and killed himself.
I know I know I've said this multiple times on multiple episodes, but it's like that question that we proposed in episode 5 way back in the day about like what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, is a place haunted because, like, is a place haunted and that causes people to do crazy things, or do people just feel upset because they know that someone's died in that house and it kind of feeds on some pre-existing depression that's already there and makes them, you know, do things they wouldn't normally do. Mm-hmm. And I always think about that with these haunting stories where the haunting doesn't seem to stop, right? It's like this horrible tragedy happened and then now stuff keeps happening. Like that architect you said threw himself off of the museum that he built. It's like, did that happen because like that house made him do that? Or did he do that because that energy was just like bad and he, yes, already knew something bad had happened there and it was feeding off of like making his depression worse? I don't know. It's very interesting.
Yes.
You never know.
The house made him do it.
Well, I believe it.
That's what I'm telling you. Thank you. I heard we're having a special guest next week.
We are. Not going to give anything away, but it's someone you guys have been asking to come on the podcast for a while. It's going to be a very, I think it's going to be a good episode, but I don't want to jinx it.
Maybe tell me
it
if I'm be. Hot or cold. Hot or cold. Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, yeah. You guessed it. She's coming on the podcast next week.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yes. We got Dr. Phil, Oprah Winfrey, and the ghost of
George Washington.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, the ghost of George Washington.
Wow, what an interesting group. Do you think Dr. Phil would be like, George Washington, you're going to the ranch?
Yeah.
Now, you guys, I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, that episode of Let's Get Haunted was really just a delight, and I can't wait to re-listen to this episode again. And so I want to let you know, let us know in the SoundCloud comments how many times in a row you re-listen to this episode. God.
This is going to, you know what, though? Some of our worst episodes have turned into, like, cult classic favorites amongst the fans, because when you and I devolve into insanity, that's what people like. It's certainly very haunted. Thank you, Natalia. This was a great episode. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Well, it was very requested by lots of people. So you guys can stop fucking commenting on shit about this stupid fucking house.
Yeah. Go visit the Whaley House. Tell us if you've had scary experiences with it. You can email us your listener stories at letsgethauntedpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on all of our social media. We are at Let's Get Haunted pretty much everywhere you can think of. And our subreddit just hit 1,000 members. So that's pretty exciting.
Wow. Do you want to do our sign off?
Yeah. Oh, also, we've gotten some emails, people asking, hey, where's my merch that I bought? So I think maybe some people didn't read the full description of the merch. So we did a pre-sale 2 or 3 weeks ago. And the shipping time from the time that you made your order is 4 to 6 weeks. So I saw some questions in the DMs and on the emails. So I just wanted to let people know that's the timeline, and we're doing this all ourselves. So we're doing all the shipping and everything. So it's 4 to 6 weeks.
Which means that your products will be touched by my and Alyssa's hands.
Oh shit. I didn't even think of that. Yes. So don't ever wash your merch is what I'm saying. Okay. Let me do our sign off. BRB. Oh, no. Everything is so sad about this story. BRB.
What about the Whale House? Yeah.
BRB. Gotta go find Tom Green and troll a child's ghost.
Bye.